Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So normally we chant the Sri Brahma Samhita at this time, but we're on a expedited schedule reading the Pastimes of Lord Nrsingadev, since his appearance is on Monday, and I want to make sure to cover the entire section that describes his appearance. So we're going to go right through today. Last night we read about what Prahlad learned in school. What was the best thing that he learned? His father wanted to know, after investing so much in his education with Shanda and Amarka, who were the best demon teachers he could find. And when he came to Prahlad, and Prahlad offered his obeisances at his father's feet, his heart softened, because he had been previously annoyed with him when he had asked what's the best thing he learned. And Prahlad told him that people who attach to householder life have no chance of understanding anything valuable in life, and he should give everything up and go to the forest. And he didn't like that very much at all, because he's dedicated to a life of sense enjoyment, and he had attained a high level of sense enjoyment through tapasya. So when he gave another chance for the teachers to instruct him in the art of politics, specifically understanding friends and enemies and how to negotiate in this world so that one can get one's best advantage. And then he asked him again. Prahlad Maharaj told him that the best thing he had learned is the 9 processes of devotional service. And of course, Hiranyakashipu held a burning hatred for Vishnu in his heart, who had killed his brother Hiranyaka. And hearing about Prahlad, his son, his offspring, being so dedicated to Vishnu, made him feel really that Prahlad was a traitor. And he really, he'll become, as we're entering into the section, become very, very angry and disturbed and want to kill him. This is the nature of the materialistic mind and heart, that anything that interrupts my sense gratification, I would like to do away with it. I'd like to kill it. And whatever's expedient for my sense gratification, then I'll make some arrangement. The instructions that Prahlad received from his spiritual master, Narada Muni, while he was in the womb, went very deep, and he understood those instructions. And this section describing Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam are worth studying over and over again, because within these instructions and in this purport, in this chapter, there is a condensation of the information that one needs to prosecute the 9 processes of devotional service in a nutshell, and it also describes deity worship and the offenses to be avoided, the 10 offenses against the holy name. If you were stranded on a desert island and you didn't have any other thing, if you had that, you could find your way into a life of regulated and then pure devotional service through these instructions given in this section. So it's worth reading. One thing I would like to note that stuck with me this morning when I was just leaving, I was remembering from last night's reading, which is natural according to the process. Prabhupada mentions it all starts in chronological order with Shravanam, which means hearing. And then when you hear, then you chant afterwards, because what are you going to say? You're going to say what you hear. And then after that, you'll remember. So hearing, chanting, remembering. And I was remembering Sakyam, in the process of devotional service, which means to befriend the Lord. This is also mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, that how is it that we become a friend of the Lord? Well, one of the most expedient ways is that one becomes a preacher. What do you do when you have a good friend And what's one way that you express your friendship? You go and you tell others about your friend. Ah, he's such a great guy. And, you know, and then this brings you closer. You know, your friend appreciates, and you also, by appreciating your friend, your appreciation for him grows. So those who are preachers, those who go out and tell other people about Krishna and remind them, all souls are part and parcel of Krishna eternally, and they've simply forgotten. And when we go and remind people that they are actually parts and parcels of Krishna and that they have an eternal loving relationship with him, this is friendship with Krishna. This is the best kind of friendship with Krishna, to go on his behalf, working on his behalf, and tell other people about Krishna. This is Sakyam, as described even in this section. And this is continuation of the chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakashipu. And of course, now we're going to hear more and more about Prahlad's instructions. And there's no meaning to the Lord without the Lord's devotees. And in fact, Lord Nrisingadeva appears specifically out of love for Prahlad Maharaj, out of appreciation for Prahlad Maharaj. He comes to protect him. Bhakti Vignamanashana, Sri Nrisingadeva. Nrisingadeva is the destroyer of obstacles on the path of devotional service. There are many obstacles. And of course, in one sense, the devotee doesn't try to remove obstacles. In one sense, the devotee, you know, to the degree that we try to remove obstacles, we understand that whatever obstacles come actually are ultimately in a higher stage of devotional service. These give us an opportunity to pray to Krishna, to take shelter of Krishna. The real purpose, the real purport of devotional service is when we cry out helplessly to Krishna. We can chant from the heart and then it comes out through the lips with this feeling of complete helplessness. Then we are approaching the realm of what is actual real devotional service. And Krishna naturally destroys our obstacles. He knows he has our best interest in mind. And when we approach him, even if it seems like there are some obstacles, these are there to purify us. And the devotee thinks, tatenu kampam susimikshamanu bunjana evatma kritam vipakam, that whatever obstacles appear to be coming before me are for my purification because of whatever things I've done in the past. And he goes on, he tolerates those things, and he goes on praying for the causeless mercy of the Lord, for special mercy. Tate anukampam susimikshamanu, that he's hoping, expecting some special consideration, special mercy from the Lord, and he goes on tolerating these things. So we'll hear about Prahlad Maharaj, who's the reason for Lord Nrisingadeva's appearance in the world. And of course, there's some question about whether, if we approach Krishna directly, whether we'll actually attain the perfection of life. But if we approach the devotee of Krishna, then there's no question about attaining perfection in life. And this is the science of Vaishnavism, that we most readily get Krishna bhakti from the bhakta. We don't approach Krishna directly, but through the bhakta. So let's hear what happens after this. We should be on the edge of our seats. Hiranyakashipu, the biggest demon who ever lived, and now he's controlling the universe, very dangerous personality, actually. And his delicate son, 5 years old, with no fear in his heart, has come before his demoniac father, who asked him, what have you learned in school? And he just told this person who hates Lord Vishnu that the 9 processes of worshiping Vishnu directly. You can imagine being in that household at that time. What's going to happen next? What's he going to say? What's the tension? And a lot of people want to know, too, because this is a universal affair. The demigods are being subjugated. Even some devotees were subjugated by this power of Hiranyakashipu. And everyone's watching. Everyone wants to know the outcome. And here comes Prahlad. He offers his obeisances and then says, devotional service to Vishnu in these nine forms. This is the best thing, Father, you big demon. And now what's going to happen? So that's the scene, and everyone's watching, and we get to hear inside. That's the meaning of revealed scripture. We have the opportunity to actually hear the inside. This is the most important thing. In San Jose, in Santa Clara County this morning, there is nothing more important than hearing what's about to take place here. And unfortunately, other people are opening newspapers, reading about some topical story about man gets hit by train, and deep cuts in the budget are coming, and oh, worry, worry. But they're missing the Bhagavatam. So we also should feel compassion that other people, we get to hear this. Sitting in this little room in the middle of a parking lot, we get to hear it. Other people should get to hear it also. That's why we broadcast these things, and then we go out and distribute them. This is Sankirtan. It means we're not satisfied just to hear it ourselves. We want to go give it to everyone else who might have a possibility of hearing it. And even if they just hear a little bit, it will give them an opportunity to hear more later and to begin their process of devotional service. Sri Guru Putra Uvacha. Namat pranitam napara pranitam suto vadatyesha tavindra shatro naishargika narshargikiyam matirasya rajan niyachamanyum kadadas mamanaha. The son of Shukracharya, Hiranyakashipu's spiritual master, said, O enemy of King Indra, O king, whatever your son Prahlad has said was not taught to him by me or anyone else. His spontaneous devotional service is naturally developed in him. Therefore, please give up your anger and do not unnecessarily accuse us. It is not good to insult a Brahmin in this way. Shinardu vacha guru naivam pratik prokto bhuya ahu surasutam na ched guru mukhyam te kuto bhadra sati matihi. Sri Narada Muni continued, when Hiranyakashipu received this reply from the teacher, he again addressed his son, Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu said, you rascal, most fallen of our family, if you have not received this education from your teachers, where have you gotten it? Purport, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that devotional service is actually bhadrasati, not abhadrasati, not abhadrasati. In other words, knowledge of devotional service can be neither inauspicious nor contrary to etiquette. To learn devotional service is the duty of everyone. Therefore, the spontaneous education of Prahlad Maharaj is supported as auspicious and perfect. Sri Paradu Vacha Matir na Krishne Padataksvatova Mito Pipadyeta Grihavratanam Adanta Gobir Vishitam Tamishram Punak Punash Charvita Charvananam. Prahlad Maharaj replied, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by the instructions of others, by their own efforts, or by a combination of both. Purport, in this verse, the word Matirna Krishne refers to devotional service rendered to Krishna. So-called politicians, erudite scholars and philosophers who read Bhagavad Gita try to twist some meaning from it to suit their material purposes. But their misunderstandings of Krishna will not yield them any profit. Because such politicians, philosophers, and scholars are interested in using Bhagavad Gita as a vehicle for adjusting things materially, for them, constant thought of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is impossible. Matirna Krishne. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktimam abhijanati, only through devotional service can one understand Krishna as he is. The so-called politicians and scholars think of Krishna as fictitious. The politician says that his Krishna is different from the Krishna depicted in Bhagavad Gita. Even though he accepts Krishna and Ram as the supreme, he thinks of Ram and Krishna as impersonal because he has no idea of service to Krishna. Thus, his only business is punak punas charvita charvananam, chewing the chewed again and again. The aim of such politicians and academic scholars is to enjoy this material world with their bodily senses. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that those who are grihavrita, whose only aim is to live comfortably with the body in the material world, cannot understand Krishna. What does grihavrita mean? Griha means? And vrata means? Grihavrata means? Yeah. And what does house mean? Does it mean just bricks and stones? Yeah, it means the whole idea of being, of staying here in the material world and finding some situation where I can enjoy. It's my comfort zone where I can keep all my stuff and be happy. Of course, everyone has to have a place to live. But the idea of grihavrat means that I'm living with the idea that I'll be here permanently. I'm going to enjoy here. I'll make some plan that I can stay here eternally and enjoy the senses. This is a grihavrat. So he's saying here, therefore it is clearly stated here that those who are grihavrat, whose only aim is to live comfortably with the body in the material world, cannot understand Krishna. So a transcendentalist thinks I could die at any minute. When I first joined the movement, Prabhupada told us a story about the hairy sage, and he lived by the Ganga. And some people, when there were followers, they saw that he was so austere and so dedicated, and he didn't have any residence. So they went and they'd ask him, you know, maybe we can bring you some clothes or some place, some shelter or something. And he said, oh, I'm not here very long. It's not a big thing. And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I had some benediction that I'll live for one lifetime of Brahma for every hair on my body. So I'm not here very long. I don't need residence. I don't need any extra comforts in life because I'm just passing through. So this is a transcendentalist idea, is that this is just a temporary stopover. The biggest news is given in the Bhagavad Gita in the first section of the second chapter. Krishna tells us, you're not going to die. The whole world is permeated with the idea that I'm going to die, I'm going to have to move on. Impermanence, and everyone's trying to preserve the griha, the body and the house and the family and everything that goes with it. Deha patra kalatradeshu atma sainye susatsapi tesham pramato nidhanam pashyanapi na pashi. You could look that up in your shloka book. You got to get the shloka book warmed up. It should be hot by the end of the class. Deha patra kalatradeshu. Deha patra. Deha patra kalatradishu. So it's naming everything that goes along with the griha. The griha means a house, it means the body, it means the wife, it means the kids, it means the stuff, it means the family dog. All of these kinds of things. This is the griha. This is my place. This is my protection, is the idea that I'm protected by these things. Deha apatra kalatradishu atma saini susatsapi. And this means Dhatmasaini susatsupi, asatsupi, means these are all fallible soldiers. Can I be protected by any of these things? No, but I have a false sense that I'm being protected by my body. I run on the beach, and therefore I'm very strong and stout, and therefore my body, because I take vitamins, it'll protect me. I'll live long time. But even Jack LaLanne died. Just a few months ago, Jack LaLanne was the fittest man in the world. In fact, he started the fitness movement in America. Way back in the 50s, he was on television. He was teaching housewives and everyone else how to stay fit when no one knew about fitness. And throughout his life, he used to swim across the channel with boats behind him when he was 7 years old. And he was the most fit person in the world. And then just recently, he just dropped dead. So the body, doesn't matter how fit you keep it, and your family members, Chitraketu found this out when he prayed and worship the sages in order to get a son. He had no son, but he wanted a son. He prayed, that will make me happy. This will fulfill my desire. And a king, of course, has to have a son. It's a big deal. It's his duty to have a son to pass on the kingdom. And not only is it a duty, but is his heartfelt desire to pass on all the great knowledge and wealth and tradition that he has. And so he had a son, finally by the grace of the great sage Angira, but afterwards the son died. And then he was plunged into the greatest sorrow. But then the sages Angira and Narada came back, and they induced the soul to come back in the body of the little boy. And they said, "Why have you left your parents prematurely?" And he said, "Excuse me, I mean no disrespect, but which parents are we talking about here? Because I've seen so many parents in so many lives. We just saw the play in New Vrindavan called The Three Lives of Bharat Maharaj, and it was stunning to watch it performed as a drama and to actually see and remember how the soul comes into a body and then according to the consciousness at the time of death. And Bharat Maharaj was a great king, and out of strong conviction for attaining the spiritual realm, he left it all. He walked away. He left it as insignificant. And he was very advanced in devotional service, but somehow he became attached to a deer. Somehow, because we're tatastha, we're small. Tatastha means neither here nor there. According to your environment, according to how you associate, according to how you deviate your intelligence, dayato vishayan pum sam sangaste shubhajayate. Sangat sangayate kama, kama krodho bijayate. You'll go there. You'll take on those qualities. And he did. He became attached to a little deer. And because of that, when he died, he was absorbed in thinking of that little deer out of affection. He had transferred his affection that he had for Krishna, and it got deviated. He transferred it to the deer. And therefore, he took birth in the next life as a deer. However, he had consciousness of his previous life, and therefore he went back to the ashram named Pulashya, and he performed yoga, even in that condition as a deer. Practically, this is, inconceivable how this happens, but it happens. This is the science of consciousness, how the consciousness moves from one to the body to the next. Daivanetrena. This is decided by higher authorities where we're going, what kind of body we'll get in our next life. You may be an American now, or you may be wealthy now, and you think, let me have this situation again as an American. And you may be born as American, but what if you're born as a cow in America? You're doomed. Here's your birth as an American cow. Good luck. Or as an American chicken. How long will you last? And so the laws of nature are inexorable and very dangerous. And Bharat Maharaj moved from that body of a deer, and then very carefully performed yoga. Next life he became Judd Bharat. And he pretended to be dull and retarded, just so he didn't have to interact with the world, just so he didn't have to talk with materialistic people, just so he would not become Grihavrata, because he knew the danger of it. By becoming attached to the body, to the house, to the family, to all the things that I think I am, I become the things I think I am. That's who we become. We become full of upadis or designations by thinking this is me. And people advertise that here's the Marlboro cigarette, and then Marlboro man. Marlboro cigarettes, you know how much money they make? Do you know? Can you look it up? They make billions of dollars, and it's an image. It's the same cigarette as any other cigarette, but it's got a picture of a cowboy on it. And someone takes a pack of Marlboro cigarettes, and they think, I'm Marlboro man. I'm smoking a cigarette. I'm like a cowboy. This is the illusion of the soul. It's like, I'm a cowboy. I'm smoking a cigarette, and I'm cool. I'm a cool cowboy smoking a hot cigarette. And so whatever I think I identify with all these things, all these upadis, and this is, all goes into the Grihavrat. This is all part of the Grihavrat, but Sarvapadiva Nirmuktam Tapratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. One must become purified of all these upadis. One must reawaken the relationship with the super soul within the heart and realize that he's my master. And by serving him, I actually, then I'm truly happy and I'm truly safe. Everything else is simply chewing the chewed. Puna punash charvita charvananam. It's the nature of the material world to look attractive and to keep some hope alive that maybe there's some more flavor in this. So I'll try it again, I'll try it again, I'll try it again. And everyone's chewing that which has already been chewed. It's all been done and more. Lord, I think that was a lyric from George Harrison. But it's a good sutra to remember. It's all been done and more. You think you've got some new idea for sense gratification, some new angle on how to become happy, some new style that I'm going to show. That's been done and more. Mick Jagger did it before you. And, you know, it's not new. He tried it and, you know, he's still singing his old songs. But they're recycled over and over again, and now he's an old man. He's going to pass on. Nothing against Mick, if you're watching. But this is the nature of the material world, and it all goes into the Griha Vrat, the vow, the feeling in my heart that I'm going to stick here. Somehow I'm going to make this work. That's the Griha Vrat. I'm going to make this world work. I'm going to keep this body alive somehow. Even if I take to devotional side, I may maintain some desire that somehow, but maybe it'll work out here on the other side. I'll keep this aside just in case I don't want to fully surrender to Krishna. Punat punas charvita charvananan. And when Krishna's merciful, he'll whittle away at that. He'll make it look paltry and sick and unattractive so that we'll want to give it up. So, thus his only business is punat punas charvita charvananam, chewing the chewed again and again. The aim of such politicians and academic scholars is to enjoy this material world with their bodily senses. What is the aim of politicians and academic scholars? Therefore, it is clearly stated here that those who are grihavrata, those whose aim is to live comfortably with the body in the material world, cannot understand Krishna. The two expressions, grihavrata and charvita charvananam, indicate that a materialistic person tries to enjoy sense gratification in different bodily forms, life after life, but is still unsatisfied. In the name of personalism, this ism or that ism, such persons always remain attached to the materialistic way of life. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 2:44. Good. Go ahead, do the whole verse and use the microphone. Get the mics warmed up. Do it like you're presenting to the assembly of poets and you want to embellish every word. Sing it out, open your arms up wide, sit up and sing it out like a poet.
Bhog Aishwarya Pasaktanam Taya Abhartachet Sam Vavashatmika Buddhir Samadho Na Vidyate.
Give him a big hand for that. That was about 50 times more enticing and beautiful than just reciting it out. Sing it out like that. And tell us what it means.
Those are two attests to sense enjoyment opulences. The firm determination to devotional service doesn't take place.
Bhoga Aishwarya. So bhoga means some kind of material enjoyment, and Aishwarya means this prestige that comes with the material world, Aishwarya, that I'll get some opulence here in the material world and I can go show it off. That's what Arjuna wanted. It was a materialistic consideration in the beginning. He was saying, what's the use of winning the battle if I kill all the people I was going to show it to? Why do people buy a big car? Why do they buy a fancy car? Is it because it's better than a Toyota? They want to drive down and they say, hey, Mom, look, I drive a Toyota. or I drive a Lamborghini or something. Like it. It's Aishwarya. I want to show off to other people, this is what I have. Otherwise, there's no meaning to it. If there's nobody there to appreciate it, Arjuna was saying this in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, if there's no one there to appreciate it, what's the use of having a kingdom? And so this bhoga Aishwarya, if we have this feeling that I have to have something to show, or I want something to enjoy, bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya prahita chetasam, this is my consciousness, then I can't have this resolute determination. This is all part of the griha vrat. It's this vow for the griha. It's let's hear it for the body. Let's glorify the body. Let's fix up the body. Let's fix it up again and try to enjoy it again. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam. You can't have determination when you have that feeling. Quote, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. What does not take place? Resolute determination. Resolute determination. Resolute. Resolute means you've made a resolution and you're determined to do it. Resolute determination for devotional service to the Lord. This is the real wealth of life, to have this resolute determination. Those who are attached to material enjoyment cannot be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. They cannot understand Bhagavan Krishna or his instruction, Bhagavad Gita. Adanta gobir vishitam tamishram, their path actually leads towards hellish life. Go ahead.
Resolute is an adjective. It means characterized by firmness or determination, unwavering. It comes from Latin resolutus, or to resolve.
Resolutus means to resolve? What is it?
Released, paid, loosened. Resolutus. Released, paid, loosened. Past participle of resolvere. See resolve.
Resolve. Okay, see resolve.
To make a firm decision about, to cause a person to reach a decision, to decide or express by formal vote.
And the origin of that word, resolve?
Middle English, resolven, to dissolve, to untie.
I think we're on to something here. So to dissolve, to untie, it happens simultaneously. What is it? Vidyate hriya grantish chidyante sarvashamshaya shiyante chasikarmani drishte vatmanishvare. When the knots are cut, then one can see the self as master. Then you can be released to see. So these knots have to be cut. Prahlad Maharaj is giving us this advice. Kuranath Prabhu.
I was thinking of Vyavasayatmaka Budhir is used in that verse. Is also used in verse 42, describing how the yogi has that resolute, one-pointed intelligence.
42 or 41? 42? I think it's 41.
Maybe I'm wrong.
You're probably not. You rarely are. Let's see.
Neha bikrama nashosti is 41. And,
oh,
and,
okay, 42. And good.
You have a sayat makabu.
Go ahead. So it's the same phrase is there. 41. Okay. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahushaka hyanantasya buddhayo vyavasayinam. And vyavasayatmika means resolute in Krishna consciousness. Where else is there a similar phrase in the Bhagavad Gita? I'm thinking about a verse. And it is in the Mamchayovyabhacharina Bhakti Yogini. May I have a Bhagavad Gita, please? Avyabhacharini. I was thinking of that verse. Avyabhacharini Bhakti. Mamchayovyabhacharini. Bhakti Yogena Sevate. So this is in the 14th chapter. And so this theme, over and over again, we find one-pointed devotion. And this resolute determination. Resolute means to untie, to dissolve something, and to come to a firm conviction.
So ananya pa.
Ananya. Unalloyed. Here it is on page 624. Mam, me, unto me, cha, also ya, a person who, avyabhicharena, without fail, avyabhicharena bhakti. So this is the sense. This is what's required to move forward in devotional service. And someone might say, well, you know, I'm practicing devotional service. Why aren't I feeling anything? Why aren't I advancing in devotional service? And that the answer is what's required is avyabhicharini bhakti. We have to develop this resoluteness of purpose where there's no other alternative. The griha vrata has been dissolved, that feeling that there's some other thing. There's one for me, and I'll give one to Krishna too, and two for me, and a couple for Krishna. But when it's all for Krishna, then Krishna says that by the proportion that you give to me, the proportion that you surrender to me, that I reward you accordingly. So it's proportionate. As we're able to develop this avyabhicharini bhakti, that's feeling that it's all for Krishna, then Krishna is all for us. And that's what he says in the Bhagavad Gita. Yes.
Regarding that verse, those who are too much attached to sense gratification, the resolute determination for devotional service does not arise. The opposite of that may also be true. Like those who are not attached to sense objects, it doesn't mean that the resolute determination for devotional service can arise in them. Is that correct?
That's correct, because the opposite of material enjoyment, we may say there's bhoga and tyag. So naturally it's a reaction that after I have bhoga, I have material enjoyment, then I want to give it up because it becomes a burden to me. It's not what I thought it was. It changes its shape. It changes its color. And now I don't like it anymore. My mind rejects it because the world of the mind is the world of accepting and rejecting. And it goes in this constant cycle of bhoga and tyag. So we're not after renunciation. We're after Krishna. We're after love for Krishna. So there's enjoyment, there's renunciation, and these two are the material circle. But beyond that is the life of dedication. We are meant to dedicate our energy, our love, our whatever material objects we have to Krishna's service. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not shun material things. He dressed his sannyasis in very nice clothes. He had limousines to drive them around in because at the time people did not respect Gaudiya Vaishnavas. They thought they were a tattered bunch and they had nothing to offer. And if they came to your door, you would not ask them any question. You just give them a piece of fruit and send them on their way. And, you know, it was not significant. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur revived the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and found that treasure trove and brought it out. And through his son, he introduced it to all of India through the Gaudiya Mutt. And to do so, to bring dignity to that, he made many innovations and used the principle of Yukta Vairagya, that everything should be used in the service of Krishna. This is not bhoga. He could live in an opulent temple or in a palace, but have no inclination within his heart whatsoever to enjoy one farthing of the money that was coming from the preaching or one inch of space in that building for his own personal sense gratification. It was all only to attract others to the dignity of devotional service. And so the idea of that tyag, just in and of itself, is valuable, is not one of the tenets of Vaishnavism. Renunciation comes as a natural result of becoming attached to Krishna. And there is no other permanent state of renunciation. Renunciation means being so attached to Krishna that everything else looks insignificant. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishyamanavartate. The supreme taste is the relationship. The rasa is the relationship I have with Krishna. And that it begins as the feeling of shantaras, or just appreciation, and then dasyaras, that I'm spurred to action, that I want to move, I want to act, but it's only my only inclination is to render service to the all great personality of Godhead. I have no other inclination. And in that, there's complete renunciation. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashuvairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitukam. Heat up those shloka books. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. 127. Means that by putting your full attention to bhakti of Krishna, to serving Krishna, then automatically, as a concomitant factor, comes renunciation and comes knowledge. Bhaktis twai stiratara bhagavan yadi sat daivena na paliti divya kishora murti mukhi swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman dharmarta kama gataya samaya pratiksha. Did you look that up too?
No, I thought you
looked
a different one.
Bhaktis twayi stiratara bhagavan yadi sat daivena na paliti divya kishora murti mukti swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman dharmarta kama gataya samaya pratiksha.
It's
412. This verse is spoken by Prabodhananda?
Bilvamangal
Thakur. That when the bhakti, when you're engaged in bhakti, then automatically mukti is, and all the other things that everyone's looking for, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, everything, it's they're standing as a maidservant outside waiting to serve the devotee. The highest position is devotional service. The only stable condition is pure bhakti. These other conditions of bhog and tyag are they're unstable. Just like there's unstable chemical combinations, and what happens? They react and they explode or they bubble over. So that's the material world. It's constantly changing. It's not stable. But devotional service is stable because in that there's satisfaction, there's love, and that rasa with Krishna. And that's the only stable condition for the soul. It's what we seek as tatastha shakti.
What
yes.
Meaning of devena?
Oh, just go ahead and use the microphone.
What is the meaning of devena na phalti in this verse? Will you?
Page number?
412. The second line, devena na phalti. So it says, bear a fruit by destiny unto us.
I don't know, I'll have to ask a pundit to go more into the Sanskrit and the grammar, and I'll let you know later. It's a good question.
Just one question regarding
that. I have a pundit
that.
Over here next. Go ahead. No, go ahead and then...
Regarding the verse that we just read, this is regarding a devotee. I think the liberation stands at my door with folded hands waiting to serve me, and all material conveniences of dharma, artha and kama stand with her. But isn't it true that as soon as the devotee looks at them who are standing at their doorstep, immediately they will disappear?
Why?
Because now he is interested in kama or artha. That means once he has his interest, to they are waiting to serve him. But if he takes service from them, they immediately disappear. Isn't that true?
He won't take. So he has no interest in taking service from them. But he engages them in Krishna service, just like as I mentioned, this principles yukta vairagya. Whatever amenities are available, we don't reject them. Anything that can be used in Krishna service should be used in Krishna service, and we don't have an artificial sense that because something seems to be a bhoga aishvarya, therefore I reject it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati showed the example, as I said, by using all kinds of things in that seemed worldly to most people to broadcast the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to make sure that it got out to the world. So a devotee's not afraid of these facilities because, as Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, they are like serpents who have had their fangs removed. Any kind of sense gratification or worldly opulence, for a yogi, they're like a snake. You get touched by those and then you're tinged and then your consciousness becomes disturbed and you can't meditate. But for the devotee, those things are defanged, and therefore, although for most people they appear dangerous, they're not. Karuna?
I was going to ask along those lines that if liberation along with Dharma, Artha, and Kama are standing at the doorstep waiting to serve the devotee, then we wouldn't expect to see devotees suffering like, lacking. Like you were talking about that devotees were considered, in Bengal, like before Bhaktisiddhanta, they were considered like insignificant beggars that didn't have any material, a ragtag bunch, I think you said, something like that. But we should expect, like Srila Prabhupada was always completely confident and he wasn't
lacking. Well,
that's
because they weren't really following. The idea of Gaudiya Vaishnam has become deviated into all kinds of opera sampradayas. And they weren't actually following the process of devotional service. Their sense of it had become lost, and it had degenerated into a sentimentalist, sahajya kind of a practice. And people knew that they weren't serious. They knew that they weren't actually austere, and that's why. And it appeared that way. And the kind of renunciation ragtag, once I was on a bus, come from Dum Dum Airport. We'd just flown in from New York City to Dum Dum Airport. That's in Calcutta. You still use Dum Dum? Yeah. Dum Dum.
They changed it to Subhash Chandra Bose Airport.
Yeah. So now, anyway, we came into Dum Dum and we got on this big bus. And we're traveling along, all the devotees, and we had stopped actually over in England, I think, and the devotees from the manor had come out. There were like 300 of us, and they had brought us prasad from the manor, and that included chapatis and sabji and everything. So we had that on the plane, and I still had a little packet of chapatis left. And so I was riding on the bus with my friend Divyanga. He's sitting next to me on the bus. We're all chanting and everything. We stopped at a train stop, and an apparent sadhu came up, and he was begging, from window to window at the bus. Because I had these chapatis, and I thought, hey, sadhu, chapati, goes well together. And I gave him a few chapatis, and he threw them back in the window at me. And Divyanga laughed all the way to Mayapur. But, I said, here, have a chapati. And then it came and hit me. And like, give me a Rolex, or, where's my cash? He wasn't really doing Madhukari. He was a fake sadhu. He wasn't humble or interested in taking whatever, that kind of thing. So that's a sense of the sadhus that were going around in the name of Gaudiya Vaishnavism at the time. It was a living. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had showed in his dioramas, these were revolutionary kind of presentations. He was interested in finding out all kinds of ways to show the process of devotional service that it would attract people's attention. And he created these dioramas, which are the little figurines and statues showing various scenes, like we have now, the changing bodies and things like that. And he had a variety of different scenes, and people would come from all over and look at those. They were fascinating. And one of them was a scene of a man doing deity worship, and I think he was worshiping a Shalagram Shila or something. And then there was a thin veil behind him, and behind the veil, his family was all there, and you could see all his attachments. And the implication, it was immediately recognizable that he was doing it all to maintain himself. In other words, the deity worship wasn't, out of pure bhakti, but it was out of some kind of maintenance. That was the idea. Did you have one more thing you were going to say?
Yes, I actually didn't have, but as soon as you said it, one more thing came into my mind. Even if someone is doing deity worship just for his maintenance, isn't that still glorious than any other professions?
No. No. In fact, vidyam cha vidyam chayas tad vedo bayam saha. Avidyayam ratum tirtva vidyayam ratum ashnate. Sri Upanishad says that ignorance is bad, but so-called knowledge is worse. In other words, if you present yourself as being meritorious based on some kind of false principle, that I'm a religionist or something, it's worse. And Prabhupada compares it to a cobra who has a beautiful diamond on his head. And you may think, oh, that's very beautiful, it's very nice. But then you get attracted and you're bitten. You're led in the wrong direction. In the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta saying, a sweeper in the street is better than a charlatan meditator. So someone may make a show, they might set up a shop on the marg, they fight for that space along the marg where all the pilgrims walk so they can get their temple. And that can be, if it's for preaching, that can be meritorious. But if the intention is because that's where the market share is and I'm going to maintain my family. The birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is of great contention because there were people maintaining it in the wrong place, advertising that was the place, and they were maintaining themselves because of it, because everyone would come there and give rupees. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, that's not the place, it was a huge uproar because he was taking away their livelihood. They weren't interested in finding out where the real place is and confirming it. They're like, yeah, but we're making money here. You know, just get out of here. You're going to ruin it for everybody. And that's that kind of deity worship is not deity worship at all. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur compared that to using the Shalagram Shila to crack nuts. In other words, the Shalagram's there and you think, I'll use it for my livelihood. I'll show him and then people will come and give money. And so he said, you might as well crack nuts with it, with the Shalagram. So it's not deity worship at all. Deity worship means to engage with the sense of I am the servant of the Lord, not that the Lord is serving me. We shouldn't ask Krishna to come and serve me by being present. So, as confirmed by Rishabhadev, Mahatsevam Dwara Mahurva Mukte, one must try to understand Krishna by serving a devotee. The word Mahat refers to a devotee. Mahatmanas tu mam parta, daivim prakritim ashrita, vajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. That's from Bhagavad Gita 9. What is the verse? Sanskrit? Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadimavyam. And that's from the 9th chapter?
Verse 13.
And the translation again is, O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. We have to come under that protection of the divine nature. Even while we're living in this world, in this body, in a house, in a city, with a job, you can live under the protection of the divine nature by taking shelter of Krishna through the process of devotional service. You can become a Mahatma. Mahatma doesn't mean that you have to become a sannyasi. Or it does, but you have to understand what sannyas means. It means sannyas. It means to connect everything to Krishna. Nyas means that you connect it, and sam means everything. So a person who knows how to connect everything to Krishna is actually living a renounced life and can come under the protection of the divine nature. It doesn't matter where you are. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in devotional service 24 hours a day. As explained in the following verses, unless one adheres to such a great personality, one cannot understand Krishna. Can you look up adhere? You have to adhere to a great personality. This is the secret of devotional service that's being given here in this section about Prahlad Maharaj. Adhere. Now we're going to find out what adhere means. Adhere. Are you adhered? Have you adhered yourself to a great devotee? Let's find out. It's the battle between the book and the computer. And the quick draw. Go ahead.
It means to stick fast or together by, or as if by grasping with suction.
Okay,
or
hold on.
Glue.
Stick fast or?
Held together by?
Held together by? Grasping?
As if by grasping or suction or being glued.
So this is what you have to glue yourself by suction to a Mahatma. Or, find yourself a Mahatma and glue yourself. Go ahead.
The next one is to be devoted as a follower or supporter.
Be devoted as a follower or supporter. And where does that word come from, pray tell?
It's Latin, or it's from either French or Latin. Adhare, it means to stick to.
That's the secret.
Ad is to, plus harer is to stick.
Harare. We're on to something here. It's like in Krishna's pastimes, when the demon would say something derogatory, then Mother Saraswati would be there to unwind it and say how it was actually a glorification. What did you find? Anything different? Same. Exactly the same. Stick to as if by suction. So you adhere yourself to a Mahatma. This is what is being offered as the solution, how to become advanced in God consciousness. Adhere, harer. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in devotional service 24 hours a day. As explained in the following verses, unless one adheres to such a great personality, one cannot understand Krishna. Hiranyakashipu wanted to know where Prahlad had gotten this Krishna consciousness. Who had taught him? Prahlad sarcastically replied, "My dear father, persons like you never understand Krishna. One can understand Krishna only by serving a Mahat, a great soul. Those who try to adjust material conditions are said to be chewing the chewed. No one has been able to adjust material conditions, but life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail." May I repeat? No one has been able to adjust material conditions. But life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail. May I read it one more time? No one has been able to adjust material conditions. But life after life, generation after generation, people try and repeatedly fail. Can you look up adjust? No one. Anyone? Has anyone done it? No one. And it's been going on life after life, generation after generation, and people repeatedly fail. He needs a mic back there. Oh, go ahead. You got the... Let's hear adjust. You got it? Okay.
But those who failed, most of them in general, they think that they were successful in adjusting. Only few people know that actually they failed. So
people find out sooner or later. You know, I've seen it myself. People who think they're successful or have been successful to some degree. But Krishna says, "Mrityu sarva harashchaham." Death evens all those things out. It's a stark realization, actually. If you get around somebody who's dying, you'll see that they have a revelation, normally. That, all right, I see it now. It could be at the last minute, but they'll see it. That, you know, I tried and now everything's being taken. It's a helpless condition. So one way or another, one realizes. ADJ. You got it?
It's a verb. It means to change so as to match or fit, to cause, to correspond, to bring into proper relationship, to adapt or confirm as to new conditions. And it's from Latin, juxta, or ad means to, and juxta means near.
Add near. Adjusta? Juxta. Near. So to try to get something to fit, I like that because... The word dukkha actually comes from a phrase that happens to deal with a spoke of a wheel that doesn't fit. It's come out of its hole and it's loose. And so there's dukkha. There's a non-fitting part. And so adjustment means to try to fit it back in again. But ultimately, in the material world, nothing, in the material solutions, nothing fits. Nothing can be adjusted to be satisfactory, especially when you're dealing with technology. Yes. You change your modem, and then you got to reset everything, right? New modem, okay, you're on hold with AT&T or SBC Global for 5 days. And then it'll take you a month, 3 months, to actually get it balanced out till you're back to normal again. And if you change anything again, same thing. Yes, Frederick Kishori.
I don't know really how to phrase it, but I have sometimes a fear of being adjusted, of getting situated. There are sometimes that the conditions of, let's say, living and having a baby and having a comfortable home kind of, they welcome a feeling of happiness. And most of the time I'm pretty happy, but there are times that I'm really scared. I'll be, you know, sitting in my room and I'd be thinking Lolly's sleeping in the other room. And I'd get really scared. I'd get really scared to adjust to the fact that she's my daughter, that she's alive, because the fear makes me feel like if I do get adjusted, if I do get really attached, that it will be taken away. So is that a wrong mentality to try to keep yourself distant a little bit and to have that fear? Or is that some kind of mental concoction I'm going on?
Well, Queen Kunti in her prayers says that she wants to have this realization of being detached from her family members, and this sense that of material contentment, and that is a valuable realization. At the same time, we can't artificially enact that and be indifferent to our family, to our children. For instance, you know, Prabhupada advised one. Early on, when devotees were bent on renunciation, because they thought that was the perfection of life, that we have to be renounced. And if the more renounced you are, the more advanced you are in Krishna consciousness. And they would artificially apply it in many ways, including in family life, when they'd have a family and then they'd be indifferent or cold towards their family. For instance, believe it or not, you know, when someone would die in a family situation, oftentimes devotees would be, oh, you know, whatever. You know, so what? You know, they're not their body anyway. That kind of a feeling, which was artificial, or they would be cold or indifferent towards their family. And may I please have a fifth canto? So there's a balance. We have to, there's a natural affection that one has for children, for one, especially for one's own child, that cannot be artificially denied because it's there for a reason. I was going to say, once a devotee was asking, asking Prabhupada about, you know, what service she was going to do now. She had a child and she felt like she was out of the loop of the normal service she was doing. And Prabhupada said, your child is your deity. You should take full care and give attention, you know, to your child. That affection can be given in a Krishna conscious way. You shouldn't lose sight and then become swept away by, you know, the material whirlpool. But you also can't artificially deny that. And if you connect everything to Krishna, then you won't be harmed. You won't be touched by the material world. And Krishna gives us advice in the Bhagavad Gita. Kaina manasa buddhya kevaler indriyarapi yogina karma kurvanti sangam tyakvat mashura. Is that the verse I'm looking for? About the lotus in the water? No. Padma Padram Ivambasi means that.
It's like one of the next.
Could you?
5:10.
Yeah. So he says that if you're living in a Krishna conscious way, you can live in the world. It means you can have children, you can be in a family, And it's like a lotus that's in the water. Verse? Page 72 in the Shloka book. But the lotus is untouched by the water. So here's another description given in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam by Lord Rishabhadev. And he's talking about family life. Those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders, nor are they attached to wives, children, friends, or wealth. At the same time, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. Such people are interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and soul together. And also in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse which says, Tavat ragadayastenas, tavat kara graham grihan, tavan mohun nigado, yavat krishna natejanaha. This is a book by Shukadeva Goswami where he says that until one becomes attached to Krishna, then one's family members become foot shackles and the house becomes a prison. But when you transfer that into Krishna consciousness, in other words, look at the residents of Gokula Vrindavan. They all have houses, kids, and cows, don't they? They're not sadhus walking around with a little water pot, although there may be a sadhu, you know, Durvas Muni enters into the Leela sometimes. But the residents of Goloka Vrindavan are all householders. They have millions of cows. Cow means house. It means you got to be, you know, you're tied down to a place. You can't move when you got a cow. And they have kids. They have everything. But it's all in relationship to Krishna. It's their love and outpouring. Everything is being utilized in Krishna's service. When they're churning butter, when they're churning yogurt, they're singing songs about Krishna. And it's so harmonious that the sound of their bangles as they're churning has a rhythm. And that mixes with the glorification and that they're giving to Krishna. It mixes in the air and it purifies the three worlds. So, you know, if you're using the Cuisinart in your kitchen and you're making, you know, you're making some sweet preparation for Krishna, that's not a mundane sound. You're in there working, right? And it's, you know, the sounds that we hear coming out of the kitchen here, although sometimes it's annoying, but at another level, it's not, because the devotees are back there cooking. They're doing seva, so therefore it's pleasing. So the art of Krishna consciousness means to live in the world but not be of it. And that's done by understanding everything's relationship with Krishna. And the verse? Brahmanyadaya ya kaman sarvan par sangam tyakva karoti ya lipite na papena padma patram ivambasa padra. You have to be like a lotus that's in the water but not touched by the water. Even though the water comes in contact with the leaf, apparently, you look at it and you'll see it doesn't touch it. So you're going to be surrounded by all these things, but internally in your heart of hearts, you're connecting everything to Krishna. And then the fear, there's no fear. Krishna's lotus feet are described as fearless when we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So internally, we have to cultivate that. Yes, Akurnath Prabhu.
There's a verse in the second chapter, which isn't in here, that yoga karma sukoshalam, that the art of work is to be able to work like that without attachment to the results. It's like 50. Buddhi yukto jahatiha ubhe sukrita duskrite tasmad yogaya yujasva yoga karma sukoshalam. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad reactions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. I thought it was related to the 5:10 that you just quoted, that you, even though working, you're not affected by the results. And this is the art. You were saying it was like an art. To be engaged in the world but not of it.
Yeah. And it can be scary. I mean, we take responsibilities in Krishna consciousness and you can lose sleep over it. Right? I know I can. And do regularly. And you know, it's an austerity, it's a tapasya, taking these responsibilities. But Krishna is always there. And you know, when we do take responsibility in Krishna consciousness, then we're forced to rise to a higher level. And, you know, we take on these, any kind of service that you take on, there will be challenges and you have to rise to the level to accommodate that. And there will be challenges. But in that process, we learn how to take shelter of Krishna. You know, throughout the Leela of Krishna, the cowherd boys are always getting into all these kinds of situations, the residents of Vrindavan, where they have to call out, Krishna, come save us. Always. But they feel fearless. When they walked into the Agasura, they looked and they saw, wow, it looks like a huge snake. And they go, let's go inside. And they thought, because Krishna's right there, no problem. You know, so when we enter into these, you know, household life, having children or taking other kinds of responsibilities, it feels like we're being swallowed up sometimes, you know. But the only hope really is that we call out, Krishna, Krishna, please save me. Everyone's in the same situation in this material world. Some know it and some don't. The same situation means it's precarious. And there is no real security here. My sense of security, even Helen Keller, who was a philosopher, she said that this sense of security in the material world is illusory. There is no security. When I have a sense of security, know it to be illusion. You don't have any security. It's not, nothing's guaranteed. It can go down at any minute. It can go off in a different direction. So you take shelter of Krishna and do your best. Yes, Ramananda.
My problem is, I do not know when to call for help, when to call Krishna for help and when not to call. So I end up usually never calling for help because I don't know whether to call for help is actually a good thing or bad thing.
It's good.
Okay, but next thing is, how do I know when to call for help? For example, if I am dying, I know that like the boys who were entering the Agasura when they were dying, that is one case. But in day-to-day situations, there are so many problems. And calling for help to Krishna is like just bothering him all the time with my problems.
We should be in the habit of calling, you know, asking Krishna for help in whatever we do. And it depends how you ask, what you're asking for. If you're asking, I want help because I want to be satisfied in the material world, that's not a first-class thing to ask for, although akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. It's considered to be much better than not. If somebody, even if you're a materialist, the Bhagavatam says, you have material desires, better to ask Krishna, please help me fulfill these desires, than just to think, you know, I'm doing it on my own. Because when you ask Krishna, then he'll purify that desire. And when you're a devotee, and you know, if you can hone your desire, and you're asking, and you know why you're asking, be clear that, you know, please help me so I can do more service. Please help me get through this so I can adjust my life to serve you better. And pray like that. Then you should pray constantly. There's no reason to stop praying.
But how do you know that whether the current situation is better for Krishna consciousness or the so-called adjustment will be better? Because sometimes I may ask for some adjustment, but that may turn out to be worse for practice of Krishna consciousness than the current situation.
You have to take help from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and make your best effort. You don't know, because we're walking through this world in a blind way, and we can't see for sure what's going to happen next. And we move forward the best we can. You can't connect the dots forward, but backwards often you can see. Prabhupada gives that famous lecture. during the disappearance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, who knew that I would come to America and things would turn out? Who knew that we would all come together and meet like this and they would help me to spread Krishna consciousness? Who knew? And he went on, who knew, who knew, who knew? He was speaking about, you know, when he came, it was very uncertain. He was moving forward with most of the parts of his life. You can see from reading his biography of how he was moving forward. He'd take shelter of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Even taking sannyas, he was getting dreams from his spiritual master, calling him out, come out and preach and give up, you know, other things and just go for this. And he said, I was horrified. Because it's a transition. Transitions are difficult. And like, how do I move from this to that? Then he went to confirm it. He asked some god brothers, I'm having these dreams, what should I do? One god brother told him, you join our temple, and once you prove yourself, then we'll see. You know, then it'll be proof. Then he went to another god brother and said, do it immediately. Your guru is calling you. And in that moment, he had the conviction. He understood this is the right thing to do. But that didn't happen in 2 days. That happened over a process of time. We move gradually through this life and we take shelter of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and move forward to the best of our ability. And sometimes it looks unclear. We don't know. And in those situations, we go on taking shelter of Krishna and praying. And then we can, at certain junctures, we'll see how things are moving by Krishna's arrangement. Who knew? Yes.
There is a verse that goes, always depend on me for everything. I don't know the whole verse, but... in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, always depend on me for everything.
And yes, in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I'm giving intelligence from the heart. Those who take my direction in that way, they'll never be lost. But if you don't hear me, then you'll be lost. And ananyaschintayantamam yejana paripasate tesham nityabdi yuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. And Krishna is saying, I protect you. I carry what you lack. Continue meditating on me in all circumstances of life. So you take the example of the great devotees like Kunti and Bhishma. Their lives were not without controversy. They weren't without major decisions and controversy and indecision at some points, and they would have to take shelter of Krishna. So you go on like that.
Sorry, one more follow-up question to what I asked. From the perspective of a devotee, if he is in some kind of so-called trouble, it may not be a trouble at all, but let's say some trouble, he's probably thinking that there is some trouble. What does Krishna actually like? Does he want his devotees to ask for help, or he prefers his devotees not to, if they do not ask him for help? Or he doesn't care in either case.
You can't be artificial. You can't say that because Madhavendra Puri never asked anybody for anything, and he didn't. He was in a situation in his devotional services relationship with Krishna where he didn't ask anything from Krishna at all. He didn't ask anybody for anything. He would simply go and he would sit down, and if somebody brought him something, he would take it. But we can't imitate that. Gajendra was another case. He's glorified. Prahlad Maharaj, who was considered the topmost devotee, he got inspired by Gajendra. And Gajendra, by some standards, you say, well, that's not pure devotional service. Even Gajendra said it himself. He said, look, Krishna, this isn't pure devotional service, but I'm praying to you right now. I got an alligator on my leg, and I'm going down, and it's scary. And he said, I'm praying to you now. But that was glorious for Gajendra to pray like that. We don't calculate so much that, but according to the position we're in now, we take shelter with the way that we can, the best. And that's considered beautiful. Sve sve adhikarya nishta saguna parikirtita. Krishna tells Uddhava that those who act according to their adhikari, they are properly situated, and that's a good quality. So you do what you have to do in the situation you're in now. Yes.
Sometimes we see religion and religious people, Christians, others, that they think. In fact, even devotees, there's that, like my friend, who the homeless guy from Santa Cruz, he's always talking about, you know, I'm always, whenever I get in trouble, I ask Krishna for something, and then he gives me whatever I ask for, kind of thing. But, you know, what's the difference between being dependent on Krishna in devotional service and making God our order supplier? Kind of that idea that the function of God is to make me happy in this world, kind of thing.
Well, it's really your intention, the intention in your heart. If you intend to serve Krishna with whatever he gives you, then this is what's considered. Because Krishna's bhava-grahi janardana. He knows what the inner core of our heart is. And we're fortunate if we can develop that sincerity of purpose. And Prabhupada said it over and over again, be sincere, be sincere, be sincere. That's that's our main duty. Cultivate sincerity. And you can cultivate it. You look inside and see what it is, and you winnow out the things that are perhaps self-interested, or they're not so beautiful, actually. They're not so attractive to Krishna. What's attractive to Krishna? What's attractive to any living entity? If somebody comes to you and they're self-interested and they offer you something, but they want something in return, it's not such a compelling gift, because you're thinking like, all right, he gave me this thing, but I know what he wants. You know, he wants to stay at my house, you know, or whatever it is. But if someone gives you something out of love, you'll respond in a completely different way. You will be changed forever. When someone gives you something out of love, you'll always remember it when someone says something deeply moving and appreciative. You know, this weekend when we were in New Vrindavan, I met a godbrother, Tarika, who you know from Facebook.
Yeah.
Perfectly lovely devotee and beautiful family and everything, and he was there. I think he normally doesn't come out because he has some condition where he doesn't, you know, move out of his wheelchair. Well, he was in a wheelchair there. But he came up afterwards to talk to me, and we were exchanging just loving appreciation, where he was expressing from his heart some things, and I was just overwhelmed. And I looked over, and, you know, two of the there was Madhukari and Vishnujana was there, and there were literally tears coming out of their eyes because they were moved by the words that he was saying. And it was just a loving exchange between godbrothers, appreciation for each other, you know, that we had. And it moved the other devotees to tears, you know, just watching that. That's what, you know, that's what's in real rasa and in our relationship with Krishna. If it's unmotivated, if it's sincere, if a child offers something to the father or the mother, and, you know, they'll go out on Mother's Day and pick a flower from the garden that the mother grew. The mother grew the roses. She bought the seeds. She planted it. She cultivated everything. And then the child walks out on Mother's Day and picks the rose and brings it in. Here, I brought you this. You know, if it's sincere, if it's innocent, there's a overwhelming feeling the mother will get. So Krishna says, Patram pushpam palam toyam, yome bhaktya prayachati, taraham bhaktyu paritam ashnami paritatmana. Bhakti. It's the bhakti that's in it that counts. So we have to look in and see, you know, what's my motive? Why am I asking? And there will be a reciprocation also. If I'm asking for my own purposes, if I have self-motivated devotional service, I won't feel satisfied. It's another kind of adjustment, ultimately, that I'm trying to make for my own purposes. So by judging according to the standard of the devotees, who are pure devotees, we study their lives, we see what their standard of devotion is. Like Prahlad Maharaj says, okay, I'll take a benediction. The benediction I want is that there's no material desires from within the core of my heart. Let that be my, please give me that benediction. We can see from that standard and judge, you know, what we're asking for.
I have a question. So how justified is it to ask this?
So is it justifiable every time when you pray to Krishna for help and you don't get a response from him or maybe a solution from him, you just lose your hope and stop praying? Or do you expect in every case that you pray for Krishna, you expect a response from him?
Well, we can't see how Krishna's working. Like with this whole Leela with Hiranyakashipu, the demigods, from their perspective, had something to lose. They had already lost a lot because of Hiranyakashipu, and they were worried about that, and they were watching how these benedictions had been given by Brahma, and they were really concerned. They went to Vishnu, and they said, you know, please, can we rectify this situation? And even up to the time when Hiranyakashipu was being killed and there was a fight going on between Nrisingadeva and Hiranyakashipu, the demigods were still concerned because they were thinking, is that really Vishnu? Can he really defeat this guy? And at one point he grabbed onto him and he let him go, or it looked like he slipped away. And you can imagine in that split second when that happened, the demigods were thinking, oh no. You know, not only is he going to lose, he might lose the fight, because look at, they've already lost everything up to this point, and then, you know, Vishnu, who they didn't really recognize, they'd never seen Vishnu look like that. And even Lakshmi wasn't sure. And then he gets away, and they'd been seen already rooting for the other side, like, get him, get him, get him. It's like, oh no. So there was some concern about what was really going to happen. There was a suspense there. And then finally he killed him and restored order to the universe and glorified his devotee Prahlad in the process, who had no doubt at any time. He was always seeing Lord Nrisingadeva. So depending on our, you know, the quality of our faith, we may be able to see how Krishna's hand is working and everything. We may be able to accept certain conditions as Krishna's mercy, even if they're adverse. Advanced devotees like Kunti, you know, she's praying for it to come more and more. Let the adversity come. Devotees don't necessarily pray to remove obstacles because they take them as an opportunity to deepen their devotion. As Queen Kunti proved. Yes.
I always think about how Dhruva Maharaj, he had some desire, material desire. He wanted a big kingdom. He wanted to show up his father and his stepbrother and everything. But then because he approached Krishna, he got something much better than that desire. He was actually ashamed that he had approached with a material desire, because Krishna is more kind than other demigods may give you what you want, even if it's not good for you. But Krishna is actually looking out for that you can get the best thing, something really worthwhile. So you may think, oh, I want to, you know, win the lottery. I'm going to buy a lottery ticket, and then if Krishna doesn't make you win the lottery, oh, why didn't he do what I wanted? But actually, that wouldn't be good for you. You know, but because you're approaching him, you know, you'll be cured of the sinful behavior of gambling and so forth.
Yeah, and that's the point. That's an excellent point. There are verses like that in both in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in the Bhagavatam about how Krishna is observing the bhakta and saying that, you know, my devotional service is all purifying, all satisfying, but here he is performing devotional service and he has some condition or some material desire. And Krishna says, well, he may be a fool, but I'm not. So I'm going to give him what he desires, but I'm going to give it to him in a way that he'll never ask for it again. And you may have to suffer through that. You may have to suffer through that. In other words, you may be thinking, you know, why is Krishna changing me up here? You know, change up means is that you got a 20 and I'll say, I'm going to give you then and then I give you less. You know, it's like, hey, wait a minute. And you may think that you just got ripped off. But when Krishna rips you off, he does it for your highest good. I mean, you should keep in mind that I don't know what's good for me. I really don't know what's good for me. And there, the prayer at the end of the Sri Ashupanishad, the devotee says, oh, my Lord, as powerful as fire, omnipotent one, now I've fallen to the ground at your feet, offer you all obeisances. Please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all I've done in the past, please free me from the reaction for my past sins so there'll be no hindrance to my progress. In other words, there's a surrender that there's a feeling that I don't know what's good for me. I don't know what's in my past. And Prabhupada expressed some sense of this when he said, you know, when he left his family and his business was dismantled by whom? Who dismantled his business, Prabhupada said? Krishna. You know, every businessman wants to see the bottom line go up, right? And then when it starts going down, how do you feel? I'm useless. I'm not saying Prabhupada felt like this necessarily, but I'm just saying in general, you know, you take to something and you think, I want to win. I wanted this to be successful. And then you can always say, well, I'll use it in Krishna's service. But Krishna might have another idea. You might pray, you know, Krishna, please, I want to make $1 billion and I'm going to build the biggest temple here in Silicon Valley and it'll make the World Trade Center look tiny. And, you know, have all these, Krishna, please help me. And then Krishna goes, nah, not a good idea. I'll tell you what we're going to do instead. I'm going to take all your money and you'll end up under a bridge. And then, you know, you'll find an Ishopanishad under a log. And then you'll read it and you'll develop pure devotion. And then you'll, you know, become a great Mahatma. You know, that might be his plan. So we have to be open to that, not become atheistic if Krishna doesn't answer, you know, my every prayer. He's not our order supplier. He's the supreme autocrat. He can do whatever he wants. And we should appreciate one thing. He's our best friend. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. He has our best interest in mind. Suhrit means the best kind of friend. In Sanskrit, there are various kinds of friends delineated by various words like bandhu. But the best friend is the one, he sticks with you all the time, no matter where you go, no matter what you do. He doesn't forsake you. And he has your best interest in mind, and he knows your best interest. Do you know that? Do any of your other friends do that? Know that? Does your counselor, you know, if you want to go to a psychologist to solve your problems, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but you might be thinking, you know, it's like, he doesn't really know, you know, he can't figure it all out. He'll do the best he can, but Krishna can. He knows. He's the best friend. If we have that kind of faith in Krishna when we pray and it goes in a different way, then we'll at least for the time being, we may be frustrated, but it all comes out in the wash. Just like with Hiranyakashipu, no one could see at first how Krishna was connecting all of the different points so that it would come out to be perfect. But he does that in his lila. So you have to hear and develop faith. Hare Krishna. You don't look very happy. Okay.
Prabhuji, how to pray to Krishna to remove our anarthas? There are also obstacles or difficulties. What kind of attitude should I...
For prayers and attitude, you can take what the great devotees have said before. You know, like Prahlad Maharaj has his prayers and there are prayers by Prithu Maharaj, there are prayers by Bhishma Dev, and study those prayers and see what they say. This is one of the best ways to offer prayers. And there's another way to offer prayers. Prabhupada mentions this in one of his writings, that you can bare your soul to Krishna and tell him, look, I'm drowning in this ocean of material life, and these are my anxieties, and I'm a soul surrendered unto you. You do what you wish. Please help me in the best way. And you can also follow the standard prayers that are given by Kunti, by Prithu Maharaj, by Bhishma Dev, all these great devotees. Study them and then make them yours. You know, say them over and over again in the same way that they said them, but do it meaningfully, and then you'll have a template to follow. That's why all those prayers are there for our instruction. Okay? All right. How are you all doing? Are you getting restless? A little bit?
No.
No. You ready to hear some more Bhagavatam, yes, or do you want to do something else?
Yes.
You want to go door to door? We have choices. All right, we're continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam on text number 31, Canto 7, Chapter 5, text 31. Na te vidu swarta gatim hi vishnum durashaya ye bahirarta maninaha. Andaya tandair upaniya manas te pisha tantram uritam nibadaha. Persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as their leader or guru a similarly blind man attached to external sense objects cannot understand that the goal of life is to return home back to Godhead and engage others and engage in the service of Lord Vishnu. As blind men guided by another blind man miss the right path and fall into a ditch, materially attached men led by another materially attached man are bound by the ropes of fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords, and they continue again and again in materialistic life, suffering the threefold miseries. Purport. Since there must always be a difference of opinion between demons and devotees, Hiranyakashipu, when criticized by his son, Prahlad Maharaj, should not have been surprised that Prahlad Maharaj differed from his way of life. Nonetheless, Hiranyakashipu was extremely angry and wanted to rebuke his son for deriding his teacher or spiritual master, who had been born in the Brahmin family of the great Acharya Shukracharya. The word Shukra means semen, and Acharya refers to a teacher or guru. Hereditary gurus or spiritual masters have been accepted everywhere since time immemorial, but Prahlad Maharaj declined to accept such a seminal guru or take instruction from him. An actual guru is Kshatriya, one who has heard or received perfect knowledge through parampara, the disciplic succession. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj did not recognize a seminal spiritual master. Such spiritual masters are not at all interested in Vishnu. Indeed, they are hopeful of material success. Bahir Artha Manina. The word Bahi means external, Artha means interest, and Manina means taking very seriously. Generally speaking, practically everyone is unaware of the spiritual world. The knowledge of the materialist is restricted within the 4 billion mile limit of this material world, which is the dark portion of the creation. They do not know that beyond the material world is the spiritual world. Unless one is a devotee of the Lord, one cannot understand the existence of the spiritual world. Gurus, teachers, who are simply interested in this material world, are described in this verse as anda, blind. Such blind men may lead many other blind followers without true knowledge of material conditions, but they are not accepted by devotees like Prahlad Maharaj. Such blind leaders, being interested in the external material world, are always bound by the strong ropes of material nature.